Hello, Combi Nation. My name is Subi Sadeh. I've spent over a decade in medical device, pharma, and combination product development. Our industry feels complicated sometimes. Drugs, devices, clinical trials, submissions, sterilization, validation, design control, risk management, market access, reimbursement. The list goes on. My goal is mastery. So this podcast is to ask questions I have to people who may have the answers. Each week on the Combinate podcast, I talk to someone about their area to further understand and simplify. Whether you're a pharma person trying to understand the next wave of products, or a device person trying to navigate a pharma system you're unfamiliar with, or a newbie in both areas, I invite you to listen, and together we can simplify by combinating. Hi, everybody, and welcome to this special episode of the Combinate podcast. I'm your host, Subi Sadeh. If you don't know Peter Birch, who's joining us from sunny Australia, he's the CEO and founder of Talking Health Tech, which has recently switched to 4K video content. And he's doing a lot of, he has a lot of cameras and a lot of equipment that he posts about and is building a big community in Australia around health tech. So welcome, Peter.
Subi, thanks so much. I'm glad we finally started recording because we burnt most of the time that we had allocated just chatting, geeking out about gear and video cameras and other content and creation. So I'm really looking forward to being able to speak to you from Australia. I'm in Melbourne at the moment. I normally live in Sydney. It's not as sunny as we'd hope, but it's still lovely. So thank you so much for having me on the show.
Yeah, honor is mine. And for you folks to know, we were arguing about what defines a portable mic. But anyways, so Peter's been recording for a while, and Peter, you've been recording for a while, and you're in the 350 episode mark now. What's changed?
Yeah, dude, look, I'll give you some context. So I run the Talking Health Tech podcast here in Australia. It started in 2018. So nearly, it'll be 5 years at the end of this year of doing the podcast. And since episode one, it was interesting. When we did episode one, I remember it vividly, and you can go back and listen, where I was interviewing a founder of a company called CoView here in Australia, and they create a telehealth platform. And the perspective and the angle of that particular conversation was basically explain telehealth. Is this a fad? Is this going to be something necessary or useful? So it was this nice kind of capture in time. And then obviously through everything that's happened in the past few years, the world has become much more familiar with telehealth. We did a check-in with the same guest, Sylvia from CoView, in episode 250, I think, or 200, like so after the pandemic. And yeah, just talking about all the different things that have happened within the healthcare space. The podcast Talking Health Tech started originally because I work within the healthcare space and the technology side, doing operations, general management, a lot of doing, working alongside founders, but I also worked a lot in larger organizations too. So very familiar with the space, but then felt there was definitely a need for sharing conversations with those that are making more meaningful impact and helping people learn and connect about the space, much like you're doing as well. And just built the community around it and continued to iterate and learn. And it seems to have been well received within the space. And I feel like we're just getting started at episode 349 now. So there's so much more to talk about.
Yeah, I think that with every episode, I'm like,
yeah,
I feel like I'm at 1% of the journey. I feel like I just started.
And I remember, like, someone said to me, oh, like when I'd started, and I think we're at episode 4 or 5, and someone said, well, how many are you going to do? Maybe 20? Because after you speak to these companies, there's not really anything else to talk about. But when you think about, like, the areas of healthcare and technology, originally my lens was just talking about the different practice management systems within the outpatient space here in Australia. And that's, you know, just one tiny little sliver of a context of what's going on. But then talk about the payment providers, but then all the different technologies. But then what about implementation? What about ethics, governance? What about emerging technologies, commercialization? So there's a plethora of, and this is just in digital health. What about medtech, biotech, life sciences? The head kind of explodes a little bit when you think about the context. But I love these exploring topics that can be overwhelming to start with, but trying to do them in consumable, bite-sizable chunks that help more people connect with the space.
Yeah, I I find that shortage of topics is not the problem. It's typically shortage of time, right?
Yes.
That's the problem. Do you know who Rich Cardona is?
I don't think so.
So he's like a podcaster's podcaster. He was talking about how don't try to cover a topic all in one episode.
Mm.
Just do the episode and then, because I recently recorded one around plungers and stoppers, like I was telling you, the little rubber components. And I'm like, what, we talked about manufacturing, talked about some of the requirements, but we didn't talk about each individual test that they typically go through
in
their episode. And so that's really cool. Have you found that you've kind of become more niche or widened as you've gone forward?
Great question. I take, for example, artificial intelligence. Someone's like, well, have you talked about artificial intelligence in healthcare before on the podcast? And the answer is, oh, of course we have a lot of times. And how many episodes can you do on artificial intelligence at the moment? But there's, when you look at that as a broad reaching kind of topic, there's, do you lean into the diagnostic versus the administrative side? Do you lean into more about the problems it's solving, the ethics, the governance, the complexities, the specific use cases? I love talking about particular examples of implementations on the podcast. So they're my kind of favorite ones where we'll bring on the project manager within a particular hospital group here in Australia, and they talk about their experiences in implementing a particular technology within their space. And I think I enjoy those conversations the most because that's kind of from my background of like being a doer and being in the operations space. A lot of my the role and responsibility was implementing technologies in like four different organizations, whether I'm on the clinician side or whether I'm on the vendor side. And that's the trickiest part is it's not so much the creating the technology that technically will solve a problem. It's about taking out an old process and putting in a new one because it involves people who have set processes. It involves workflows. It involves emotions. It involves bureaucracy and various stakeholders. And that I think involves a lot of unpicking and also gives a lot of people a lot of less hours of sleep at night when they're thinking about like what they're doing on a day to day. So I love that. I know there are many hospital CIOs or clinic owners or end users of solutions who listen to the podcast just to live vicariously through the stories of others, or hopefully to take some hints and tips that they hear about other examples of how a technology has been implemented. And yes, it wasn't no smooth sailing. This is just, we implemented at this stage as opposed to fixing all the world's problems. It's just nice to be able to hear those genuine stories and have that back and forth conversation as well.
I remember reading a book called Switch, How to Switch, how to Change When Change is Hard or something like that.
And
I think it's always hardest to try to do work when it's already done effectively. Like the problem's already solved. You just got to convince people to start using it. And that's for whether it's a quality system or like you said, a healthcare system, or a lot of times the obviously the product development's difficult, but the implementation is hard. Are there any, the book talks about how in those instances where you need a change, you need to speak to the rationale in people, but also speak to the emotional people. And he uses this metaphor of a rider and an elephant, and that those are the two things. The rider is the guy that's going to move quick, and the elephant is the one that's going to be slower to moving. And how to try to address those both. Are there any implementations that you thought were, that come to mind?
Sure. In a recent episode, I spoke to two clinicians in Mackay Base Hospital up in Queensland here in Australia, and talking about implementing voice to text technology within their health system. And one of those clinicians was I forget their exact title, but they're the clinical lead and responsible for implementing. But then there was also the other clinician, the doctor that was involved was the emergency physician who's using it on the front line. And they both spoke very openly and frankly about the implementation and how that went. And near the end of the conversation, the more senior one shared that the reason they got the younger clinician, I guess, younger clinician involved in the implementation was because they were the most influential and everyone looked up to this doctor within the practice. And if you wanted to get a vibe on how things were going within the ED, you'd normally, there was nothing written, but you would always look to this clinician and see how people should feel. So the senior clinician wanted to make sure they had the buy-in early from this influential one from the ground up, so that then if they were a big advocate for the solution, then if they saw the vision as well and were able to use it, then people would follow. So I think there's a lot to take from that is, yes, you can have a vision from above and have processes and tell people, well, this is how we're going to do things now, so just follow the process. But rarely do those implementations go overly successfully. The implementation might work, but then the team might feel remarkably jaded and start looking for other roles. And then you feel it over the coming months and years as you've got retention wanes and other issues happen around quality. So there's something definitely in that whole understanding the culture and how the system works on the ground, and finding those advocates up front and getting their buy-in.
I actually really like the idea of working quietly. And what I mean by that is, I think a lot of times people try to do things that I could be completely wrong, by the way, but some people try to make a big show of things where it's like, we need to do a road show to show why this is important or whatever. Mm. And sometimes it's just as important as going to that influential person and saying, hey, this is what I'm thinking. How do we get this going? And it doesn't have to be a big show.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Dude, that speaks to me like 100%. It's what I tell my kids as well. Don't tell me what you're going to do. Show me what you're going to do. I think that rings true everywhere, and words are cheap. And I think that it's important to have the vision. It's important to have that guidance, and you need that. But what's impactful is seeing it firsthand and living it and doing the thing.
So I wanted to ask you, what does your process typically look like? Because I think I have less than a quarter of the episodes that you have. And my process of where it is now compared to where it was when I started, it's just like night and day difference. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, like, what are the behind the scenes underpinnings of what you do?
Yeah. Look, and to give more context, we produce podcast episodes, and that I think is what we're talking about here in terms of what that looks like behind the scenes producing an episode. We've gone in phases where it was pretty ad hoc and random, where there'd be a lot of emails back and forth, and then you'd kind of jump on and quickly record something and go, oh, okay. And you learn and you iterate. And being an operations person, I quickly kind of put together processes and forms to complete, and like, this is phase one and blah, blah, blah. And in the peak of the pandemic, when everything was virtual, and for us at that time, everything on the podcast was audio, we had a tight process. Like, we were running 4 episodes a week of the podcast. We could still go through. And it's, what was interesting is, it wasn't about we could have done more than 4 episodes a week, but in terms of from a listener's point of view, it's like, I can't listen to any episodes with that content. So that was unnecessary. So it's always trial and error. So now, as we're doing a lot more video content and doing a lot more in-person recordings, it's thrown off, if I'm being open, it's thrown off a lot of our internal processes. It's like, we start again. Yeah. And it's like any kind of change. And as you grow, it's like that whole process where you book an online form and then you do all the editing. It's much easier to edit audio when you're leaning on a team, when you're located in different areas, because the file sizes are smaller. But when you're trying to edit 4K video with multiple camera angles and you're sending files around, people need faster computers or stronger internet connections, or it's just communicating what to do is different, especially we're doing more like vlog style intros for me, where I've got a vision in my head on how it kind of sounds, but that means I've got to jump in and do some tweaking. So I'm enjoying this kind of, you build a process and then you break it down because you're going to do it a different way. And now, I don't even know if you knew, but we now produce podcast episodes for other shows as well as part of our Talking Health Tech podcast network.
I didn't know that.
There's, in addition to doing the Talking Health Tech podcast, there are 6 other shows that we produce as well. This year, we're a bit more public about doing the Talking Health Tech Podcast Network. So as we talked about before, the THT has become quite broad in its topic. You might talk about everything from implementations to the ethics to all the topics in healthcare. But then if you wanted to listen to a podcast which is really specific about investing in life sciences, you could listen to the Investor Meets Innovator podcast from Life Sciences WA, which is part of the Talking Health Tech Podcast Network. So the problem we're solving there is, there's brands or there's groups or there's even individuals that want to do their own podcast, but that whole process that we're talking about is clunky, and it's when it's your kind of side thing and you're first getting in, it's overwhelming. And we're in this unique little kind of position where we've built up a good capability. We've got a bit of a machine to be able to produce really good quality audio and do it in a streamlined way. So rather than just trying to pump out lots of episodes of our own podcast, let's lean into these awesome creators that are doing meaningful stuff and have good stories to share, and do that, like create IP for them, but help them with that really challenging part, which is not just producing it, but actually then promoting it or distributing it to an audience of people who are already engaged and listening to our show. We've got a community of people who are hungry for content about technology and healthcare. So we can do that as part of the Talking Health Tech Podcast Network.
It also deals with maybe any excess capacity you may have on your team, right?
I mean, that's interesting that you thought about that. That yes, absolutely. That's something that it allows us to build up a team and a capability. And then it gives also for me, as we're growing a small team of people who help do things behind the scenes, they can have a bit of variety in the work they do as well. So I think everyone's really enjoying this new journey for us, which is creating the podcast network and getting some of those awesome stories out there.
So do you do all the interviews?
No. So for the podcast network, for the other shows, there are one or two shows that I am also the host of those shows for. But I'm a big believer in whether it's for a brand or whether it's for a group, it's something that we would recommend that they put someone forward or have their own host. And so then we kind of just work behind the scenes to jump in when we add value, which could be on the coaching for the particular host and sharing insights for them about how to put together a good interview. We can also add that insights from the healthcare side in terms of strategically what's the story arc here? What kind of topics do you want to cover? What's the format? What is this the right format for the content that you're wanting to get across? And then also the actual like nuts and bolts of editing an episode and making it sound decent and then having the distribution network to share it with people, not just on podcast players, but online, and thinking about other things like SEO and socials and stuff like that.
Do you typically find yourself gravitating towards interviews? Have you ever done like solo episodes? What is your typical format like?
Typical format of the Talking Health Tech Podcast is interviews. Well, I have done one or two solo episodes where I've, for example, shared my experiences of becoming a certified health informatician, which I know is a qualification that many here in Australia are interested in doing. So I shared my thoughts on the process, and that was an episode that actually went particularly well in terms of downloads and stuff. On the point of solo episodes, one thing I'm really enjoying is actually building up our following on social media platforms like TikTok, and it's short form video where I'm sharing a lot of just straight up insights and value to people who are probably earlier in their career. So for example, a lot of the videos that have gone well on our TikTok or our YouTube Reels our YouTube Shorts or our Instagram Reels have been like, here are three jobs in health tech and how much you can get paid, or here's how you can pass a health informatics exam and like the key principles you should know. We've had, there's quite a few videos on there that don't get a great deal of traction, but then there's a few that really blow up in terms of the tens of thousands of views because there's people out there who are interested in getting involved in technology and healthcare or digital health or whatever you want to call it. But they're like, well, what qualification should I become? A project, what does it mean to be a project manager or a product manager? And do I need to get a qualification? So there's really good questions and answers that come through on those short form videos. So I'm enjoying playing with that as a bit of a looking at that broader strategy of reaching even more people and helping them make health tech accessible. And maybe a few people will then get really into what we're doing on those channels and then maybe come across and listen to the podcast.
So I'm wondering, because I think this is maybe a loaded question. Since you've been doing this for a while, have you ever thought about stopping?
I can't say I've been like, let's just burn the entire thing down and let's just pretend it never happened. So I've never got to that stage. We do have a lot of moving parts. So I regularly look at our different offerings, whether it's the membership side and different elements there, whether I'm like, let's turn this on or turn this off. So I have turned off elements of our paid membership or different outreach strategies. Like we used to do a lot more webinars, or you know, when Clubhouse was a thing, and I remember that vague kind of thing for a period of time. Like those, so doing all those little things there, like trying different things and stopping them, we've definitely always experimented there. But in terms of doing the Talking Health Tech podcast or Talking Health Tech in a thing, I feel like I could be doing this until I'm like 85, 90 years old, and it'll come down to people getting sick of hearing me ramble about stuff incoherently. So I think this is going to be what I do for a very long time, but it'll probably iterate in terms of what the thing looks like. But the podcast has always been consistent, and so many, even though we're getting more into video content and producing other stuff and we're doing the short form things, so many people listen to the audio podcast while they're doing other stuff. So people might be listening to this conversation we're having now while they're on a treadmill or walking the dog or taking the kids to school. So, and I think that speaks to the audience that we want to reach on the Talking Ethics side, which is the busy individuals that don't have time to sit down and watch a 30-minute webinar or a YouTube clip, but they will listen to an hour-long episode about implementing technology in MacArthur Hospital, for example. So, yeah, I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, for me, it's dishes. I actually tell my wife that dishes with a podcast is so fun. Dishes without a podcast is torture. How have you grown through podcasting? Have you grown?
Yeah, no. I'm thinking about whilst I used to do community radio and other bits and pieces too. I originally got into community radio years and years ago because I originally wanted to be a copywriter. So I wanted to write copy actually for advertising on radio. That was my original kind of thing. But then I was also thinking about being the behind the scenes guy helping people who were the front person. And then I think about my own career. In my career, I made a career in healthcare about being the operations guy, the doer, the one that worked alongside the founder, the employee that a founder would hire to do the thing. So I've always been the behind the scenes guy. And so with Talking Health Tech, I was passionate about healthcare technology and I became the front person of this thing. But I still don't consider myself naturally an extroverted kind of person that loves to like that draws energy from being out there and speaking to people. So I go to networking events and I speak to other people and I really enjoy it. But then I get home and I'm like, oh, I just need like a dark room for 6 hours. So I think in terms of my own personal growth, yes, I've learned lots about healthcare technology and that's really interesting and I'll continue to do that. But just personally, understanding that there's things that give me energy and things that train me and things that I need to do and things that I can do better. So I can learn to be like a trained extrovert and speak and connect with people and listen and value their time. But I also know that it's okay to not feel like that's the most interesting part for me. I do like my quiet time just sitting there and reflecting. That's why I love editing as well, because you sit there and you like got the headphones on and you're kind of playing with it there. So, and I think the other thing I would mention too, in terms of what I've learned and the advice I give to other people is just leaning into what makes you, you. So I do funky little things. I've got my little earrings in and I've got the cap and that's kind of become my little style, but that just is something that makes me comfortable. And I like to kind of showcase those little quirks about me. But if we were to ever have another host of the Talking Off That podcast, I wouldn't recommend to them that they also have a cap and have earrings and wear weird shoes. I would just want them to lean into whatever it is that makes them you. And I think if you can just think about what are those things that people like about you, whether it's the way you think about things or the way you talk about them, or even just what you do. And then if you can just dial those up like one or two or make those a little bit more obvious, then that and experiment with it. And I think you can usually then see, because it's easy then to be, if you're being yourself, you don't have to remember like what you were trying to be. And then you kind of unravel yourself. If you're just being you, it's much easier because you're not trying to trick anyone. You're just being genuine. I think that, and people will look past a lot of the ums and ahs and likes and nos or weird bits if they feel like you're just being a genuine person. That's another thing of that.
Yeah, I don't know. I would invite you to explore the THT uniform.
Well, yeah, this is true. We do have some pretty cool Talking Health Tech socks that you can get on our website. But
do you really? You have all the gear?
I'm wearing them now, the Talking Health Tech.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome. No, I completely agree, because there's a, I think Mark Twain said it. It's something to the effect of, if you always tell the truth, you don't have to remember anything. I feel, so to speak, like, I feel kind of well put together.
Well, and on that too, not to labor the point, but I know in the first 100 episodes of Talking Health Tech, I was a little bit self-conscious that I'm probably giving a fair bit away. There's not too much of my own perspective that I shared in a lot of those interviews. I lent into doing guest interviews because I was like, well, I'm not sure that I know enough about healthcare technology to speak confidently and be the voice of this. So I'm just going to ask a lot of other people about what they do and ask genuine questions. And so now, after doing a lot of those, I've got some pretty clear thoughts on the role of technology in healthcare. But even in those first 100 episodes, a lot of it's the guest sharing that. And I'm like, oh, that's good. And I would take that on and learn from this. A lot of my learnings have come from those conversations.
Yeah. Podcasting, probably not a good avenue if you want to become less opinionated. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the stuff that you do also outside of podcasting. What did it look like to go from podcasting, speaking to a black box, recording in the middle of the night, well, not really in the middle of the night, but editing and doing everything? Like I told you, I'm pretty into coffee. Like people say roasting coffee is a dark art.
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
Nobody does that for the social bit of it.
Yes.
Podcasting is some way in the middle.
Yeah.
Hosting conferences, like, yeah, it's not. So
no, that's true. Well, we've lent into partnering with a lot of these in-person events, and we have hosted our own, like, because we've got our membership community, and we've hosted our occasional kind of in-person meetups, but they're kind of the smaller events at offices, like after hours drinks and maybe a fireside chat, and then we'll do a recording there. We might do one of those every quarter, let's say, and it's nothing like a official event or anything. It's just a nice way to engage with our members. What we do quite regularly is partner with these bigger events like trade shows and things here in Australia, and looking at doing some internationally one day, is then having a booth at these events and recording interviews with speakers who might have spoken at those events, and then trying to take some of those learnings and insights to then curate to do a podcast episode. And I enjoy doing those because, again, they're a bit different, and it's a nice way to mix up some of the content but still keep it consistent with our own podcast. But also, I mean, healthcare kind of works like that too. That's a lot of the, at least here in Australia, how a lot of people connect with the other people in the ecosystem is these in-person events. So it's nice to be part of that. And at least we don't have to organize the big events. We can partner with these providers that put them on, and hopefully we add value back to the partner as well in helping promote their events through the stuff we do before and after as well. It's again, like I said before, it can be draining, and also the post-production process is much harder for us. A lot of extra work gets put into these in-person ones, but we are starting to see good feedback from doing these in-person recordings and the payoff coming off. And I just generally like the vibe. It's a little bit unique, and it's something that stands out a bit more and helps people connect with the content.
Is the juice worth the squeeze?
Like overall, yeah, absolutely. And I think we'll keep doing what we're doing with the in-person recordings, and it'll just get more and more extravagant. Who knows? But I'm a big believer in kind of just doing the thing next and working out, like taking the feedback, iterating, and then building the next thing. For example, our quarterly virtual summits, we're going to keep doing our live quarterly virtual summits. I feel like we do a live stream event really well, and that works, but we've played with so many different formats of those, whether we do it over 2 days or 1 day, or have lots of guests or only a few, or do we have speed networking? Do we do other bits and pieces? So it's a lot of iteration and learn and take feedback and not be too wedded to one particular format or approach and remembering what we're trying to achieve in the first place. For us, it's about creating content that makes it easier for people to understand and learn and connect about technology and healthcare. But do what like lights you up as well. And that's in the end, like we're always going to do the audio podcast because I really enjoy doing that. But also, and just so happened, it's lucky that other people like it as well, because I enjoy doing it. So we'd keep doing it anyway, because I enjoy doing it. So yeah.
Yeah, be nimble. I recently heard the other big health tech podcast, the health tech. I don't know. The James's podcast.
He always points out to me that his is better because his is the health tech podcast, whereas mine is talking. No, so I've known James for a long time, so he's a good guy. But yes, he is the health tech podcast.
So he recently had his 300th or whatever episode, and he had a person interview him, and he was talking about the difference between the painkiller content and the sort of inspirational content, the vitamin versus the painkiller. I think that's what the person asked. I thought it was a really good metaphor. And it's like, sometimes you got to do what energizes you. Sometimes you got to do what people are saying they want.
Dude, I didn't tell you this before we recorded, but the call that I had just before this recording was with Musty, who was the guy who James.
That's exactly
who. So I spoke because we caught up for the first time then, because again, similar kind of conversation to what we're having now, that there's a few people around this world that are doing similar things, which is creating content through whether it's podcasting or video, even newsletters and stuff, that are trying to share these stories. I guess the creators in the health tech space, it's a fun little circle of people. And like James, I reached out to James back in 2018, even when he was on episode 15 or something like that. And so since then we've been chatting on WhatsApp and we've done live streams together and we've done other bits and pieces and sharing that whole growth. So yeah, to that point, the painkiller content versus the vitamin, I've thought about that with our, as we're doing more stuff on TikTok and stuff like that, which is answering particular questions versus the more general, broad thinking conversations, interview style episodes that we do on the podcast. So yeah, that was episode 300 of the Health Tech Podcast is a good one for people to check out.
Yeah. Final question is, what is something you're excited about?
This thing that I created of talking health tech has gone from being this funky little side thing to being my full-time thing and resonates with others. And I like that I've been able to create a living out of doing something that I really enjoy. It allows me to still spend good quality time with my family and my kids and also do things that I could see myself doing when I'm 85, 90 years old. And now I'm speaking to people like yourself, Subi, and with Musty and all the others as well. There's others around that want to do similar things or not even do the same thing, but just share quality content and hopefully be able to at least, you know, get some value out of it for themselves, whatever that might look like, whether it's building quality relationships and things. So I love that I can start sharing some of those experiences I had and not in a way that makes me feel like the wise old person or whatever, but more just that I can give so much value back to others. I'm genuinely a big believer in just sharing what you've done with others and hopefully that gives inspiration and then the universe probably will pay you back at some point. And if it doesn't, it just feels nicer to help other people and I'm sure it'll work out in the end. So yeah, that's what keeps me going anyway.
Yeah, that's awesome. And sometimes you are the wise old person. Sometimes I mean, there's a humility there for sure, but sometimes you are actually that person. And maybe after 350 episodes, we make an elder council. Once you reach 500, you're the granddaddy of health, pharma, med debug related podcasts. Well, where can people reach you?
I'm easy to contact on LinkedIn. I try to answer all my DMs. It's a bit of a dumpster fire in my LinkedIn DMs at the moment, but give it a crack. You can also go to talkinghealthtech.com. and check out a lot of the stuff we do and reach out there. But I'm pretty active on LinkedIn, so hopefully speak to people there.
Awesome. Well, it's been really nice getting to know you a little bit better, Peter. Glad to have had you on the show.
Thanks, Subi. Appreciate it.